And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your host, Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Wow.
And Clinton Johnston. And here is Leslie of the many names.
You're just going to combine David and I together and make an amalgam? Is that what you're going to do?
You two are so much more than I could ever conceive.
Are you saying we're a little extra? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that that you're forces to be reckoned with.
Well, yes, that's true.
Well, we're off to an auspicious beginning.
It's going so well.
It's going so well.
It's almost as if we'd done this before.
I know.
Or it's almost as if we hadn't done this before.
Hadn't done it before, yes. Well, I have show hangover, so don't pay any attention to anything I say today.
I think at this point, hangover for you, it is not as much show hangover as it's just situation normal.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. I don't have to go to a theater Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday next week. I'm just going to be wandering around my house going, what do I do? I don't understand.
And why does my right knee hurt?
Exactly.
I think you should tell the story right now. No one knows who I am, but they'll find out soon enough.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So...
Would you like to share the difficulties of being an actor with our audience?
The difficulties of being an actor. So, for those of you who haven't seen Seven Guitars, at the end of Act One, there is a full blackout. And we all exit out of not normal exits.
Seven Guitars now playing at UVA's Ruth Kaplan Theater. If you want to hear the details about it, go to the podcast of our last week's show.
Yes.
Where we talked about it.
Exactly.
SevoPodcast.com.
So we go completely black, and I have to turn around and go down a ramp.
It's August Wilson. It's always completely black.
Hey! And so I turn around, and there is a stool behind me that is normally not there. Right. So obviously, I walk into it, right?
Of course.
But that's no big deal. I was like, okay, you know, whatever, a stool. I'm going to keep walking. But because I tripped over the stool, I was now further right than I normally am when I exit.
Right.
So I then ran into the stack of cinder blocks with a piece of corrugated metal on top of it at full speed because we're trying to get off stage because it's the end of Act One.
Exactly.
And I've got to change clothes for my new, you know, like, all. Yeah, ran smack dab into it with my knee, knocked stuff over. Ouch. The whole deal. I mean, so yeah, I have a gash about 2 inches long in my knee. It's like, it's bleeding profusely, and I go backstage and my stage manager comes running up to me. Oh my God, did you fall? Are you okay? What's happening? And I'm like, I'm bleeding. Could I get a Band-Aid? I just need a Band-Aid. I just need a Band-Aid. That's all.
Art. We bleed for art.
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, Lady T was her opening night speech to all of us was about how people who do Wilson are called Wilsonian soldiers and that, you know, we give blood, sweat, and tears. And so after the show, she was like, oh my God, Beauty, what happened? Are you okay? And I said, well, you said blood, sweat, and tears. She goes, no, I meant metaphorically. And I was like, well, that's not how I work, okay? Method right here. Method.
There you go. There you go. Well, let's show our interviewing method. Hey, I didn't think I would get a segue.
There you go.
I didn't think I would get a
That's
segue.
That's a good one.
And go to our first guest.
Yes, Ben.
Benjamin Rouse, new music director of the Shoffield Symphony Orchestra. Welcome to Homegrown.
Thank you so much, Clinton.
Nice to have you here.
Great to be here. You guys are a lot of fun already, and we haven't even gotten started.
I know.
Well, yeah. I guess we did.
We did.
This is the thing. That's what you're doing, and, you know, you leave the theater, take a few days, and you got your little souvenir on your right knee.
Which means, by the way, I guess that means that if they play the national anthem, you're not going to be able to take a knee.
Oh yeah,
right?
I will.
you'll soldier through that.
I will.
There we go.
I will. I did that at. Okay, my. Sorry, short story.
Uh-oh.
So my mom and my daughter and I went to the Virginia Women's Conference a few weeks ago. And, you know, and they had this lovely woman singing the national anthem. And you know, and my mom, you know, she's a black mother.
Yeah.
So she has that stare.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had to take a knee with my mother staring at me like, what the hell? Child, get the... when we get home. Yeah.
So you're saying that that all of these conservative politicians who keep putting pressure, trying to put pressure on NFL owners, they got it wrong. They just need to hit the moms.
They just need a black mama, really. Yeah, that's like, all they need is a black mama.
What are you doing? Taking what? Get your up off the...
Yeah, yes, there
you
go.
Well,
exactly.
It didn't get you up, did it?
No, it didn't. Because I had a buffer. My daughter was standing between us, so I had a buffer. I was like, you got to get past her to get to me.
Well, you know, black children, we have to learn how to ignore the stare, else we're not going to survive.
I know, right? We have to learn to just go, okay, she's boring holes into the back of my head right now, but it's all right. I'll just, you know, breathe. I just need to breathe through it.
Anyway, but our guest, Benjamin Rouse, new director of the Charles Wilson and New York Show.
You didn't get a segue that time.
I didn't. Sometimes you just cut it. So, welcome to Home.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So, what's it like coming into the Charlottesville Symphony Orchestra?
It's great coming into the symphony, and it's great coming into Charlottesville as well. It's a great place. I'm telling people who already know that, but, you know, it's, you know, fresh into town. We moved into town in August. In fact, we moved to town on Friday, August 11th. And we're unpacking, you know, into our house, you know, north of town, far from things, learning about everything the way everyone in the rest of the country was learning about things by scrolling through our phones. But it was different because when we met our neighbors, my observation at the time, not knowing quite what to make of it and being shocked as everyone else was, maybe less shocked than natives, but the timing was very strange moving in that day.
Right.
My observation was that you couldn't have a casual conversation without first addressing the subject of, hey, there's white supremacists in town.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
you yeah. couldn't, and I appreciated that people did not sweep the subject under the rug, but that not only felt the need to address it, but also to firmly state their position, that it was not yet time to get to know each other until we had figured that out. And that happened in the first several sentences.
Hmm.
And I took my cue from my new neighbors here in Charlottesville when we started out with the symphony, when our opening concert. I love symphonic music and it's my life and I think it can do great things, but I am not going to sit here and try to say that it's going to solve our race problems, certainly not single-handedly,
right.
But at least we can take a step, and at least we can take that first step that my neighbors took of addressing the situation, and not only addressing it, but stating our position. So we made a tweak to our opening weekend program to include a masterwork by a trailblazing African-American composer, the lyric for strings by George Walker, which is a
nice.
Beautiful, beautiful classic work of American lyricism.
Mm.
It's just perfectly, and George Walker is a master composer.
And how last minute was that? How much time did you guys have to work on that?
Well, we were already rehearsing in August, and so we did we changed the program a week and a half before concert week, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Or I shouldn't say change, but we augmented the program. We expanded the program.
Right.
And it's a small gesture, and I was worried about the notion when I thought, how am I going to address this? I have to say something to the audience because they're looking at their program and that piece is not in it.
Because
it was already in print.
Okay.
So we thought, well, have to say something. And I thought about what I was going to say. And I thought, well, I could say this is a token of our reaction, but then I heard the word token. I thought, listen to me talking about tokenism. So I was worried about doing anything at all because I thought that the performances by us, by a, you know, traditional symphony orchestra would, you know, that this move would smack of tokenism. And I thought about it some more and I thought, well, just do something. And if someone has a problem with it, then they can tell me and I'll be open to that. And I think what we did was understood not to be any sort of grand gesture, but merely that neighborly statement of this is where we stand, because it felt wrong not to make that statement.
Mm-hmm.
So that was that was my welcome to Charlottesville. And I in some ways, the timing couldn't have been better, because what I've heard from a lot of people is, well, what you hear from some people is, well, they came from away and this is not who we are. But then what you hear, and I'm a white male, and I have to admit that you mostly hear white people saying that. And when you speak to people of color, they are well aware that the man who drove that Charger came from Ohio, you know, but they wouldn't say this is they're from away. They would say we have issues right here at home, and this is us.
Yeah.
So it's been quite an education.
Yeah. That's one of the things I've been saying to a lot of my white friends. They're like, oh, but they were from out of town. It's like, who do you think they were visiting?
Mm-hmm.
Do you honestly think they plan something this big without coming to town and scouting out like where they were going to march and what they were going to do? They didn't all stay in hotels. They stayed with their friends.
Mm-hmm.
They're not all from out of town. They're here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got to figure that some of them walked.
Right. Exactly.
A lot of people drove, but
yeah,
there you go.
So yeah. So it's interesting because this is something that we've talked about a bunch on the show with a bunch of different people, which is how much art is a vehicle for personal expression, and in that way, how much art frequently reflects what's going on, becomes a vehicle to talk about what's going on, and almost necessarily becomes a way of talking about what's going on. And it's interesting to hear that even take place in symphonic music, which on its surface seems to be so set and so regulated.
Yeah, it's this traditional form. It's of European descent, and it is big machinery. Symphonies, just because of their size, move slower than smaller ensembles, and because the music is notated instead of improvised, it, you know, in that way it is less flexible than jazz. Mm-hmm. There are also ways, by the way, in which it's more flexible than jazz. Jazz takes place on, in musical technical terms, jazz takes place on a strict, generally, we're getting into the weeds here, but this is what I like to talk about, so I guess this is what we're talking about now.
This is the show for the weeds.
Yes.
Not the weed, by the way. So.
The weeds.
That's after the show.
So if you're talking about standard jazz, it takes place on a strict rhythmic matrix. Uh-huh. And it's amazing how rhythmically precise jazz musicians are. We think of rhythmic precision in musics like funk and, you know, Michael Jackson and disco and all that stuff. But actually, a jazz combo plays with amazing rhythmic precision.
Yeah.
Whereas actually in the classical music, we typically are, different people have different approaches to this, but classical ensembles, orchestras included, typically obey, or rather disobey the pulse more frequently. We play with a lot of what's known as tempo rubato, robbed time, where you rob from Peter to pay Paul a little bit. You stretch this beat out and then you shorten the next one, so it all sort of averages out. But we're quite free with time in a way that jazz musicians aren't. Jazz musicians are free with pitches, and in fact with making up their melodies.
Mm-hmm.
But if you listen to a symphony playing and you sort of snap along to it, you'll find, oh, they're stretching this one and then they're racing through this one a little bit more. So there's actually a degree of freedom there.
And is that part of the role of the conductor or the director to signal the time?
Yes. In fact, I would say that it's the primary role. Ideally, a conductor is involved in every dimension and every aspect of the music making, but long time ago, the composer Wagner, who was also knew about conducting, said the conductor's primary responsibility is setting the tempo, setting how fast you go, and then changing the tempo in midstream. So that's a big thing about what you do.
That's interesting, because I'll admit I'm a big jazz fan, mm-hmm. and I have experience with symphonic music. I've seen a lot of it. I've heard a lot of it. But it has always struck me as that is the more staid and set form.
Regimented, yeah.
Yeah,
and regimented form, as opposed to jazz, which has seemed right. more exciting to me because it's more free form and
right.
more
yeah.
room for interpretation.
I've had
friends who are into symphony, who are into classical music, who keep saying to me, no, you don't understand the level of interpretation that is possible even when things are written out.
Well, it's interpretation versus invention. Freely improvised jazz is invention on the spot, right?
Yeah.
And I say freely improvised there. Now we're playing fast and loose because there's free jazz versus
yeah.
form jazz or jazz that conforms to the changes of the standards.
Right.
And it's also true that free jazz is as free with time as anything. If you listen to one of my favorite albums, Circle, that free jazz band with Chick Corea.
Oh yeah,
on the
yeah.
keys.
Oh yeah.
I mean, and obviously they're as free with time as anyone, and. What Barry Atchell and I can't remember all this, a quartet. They're all absolute genies. Is Dave Holland's on that album? Isn't he?
I can't
playing
remember.
Bass. I don't know.
It's, anyway, I'm no encyclopedia of jazz, but I do, and I've had select exposure, and I know some things that I like, and I really like free jazz, and they're as free with time as, or even more free with time than orchestras are. But yeah, there is. You're in a show right now.
Yeah.
You've got a line. It doesn't say, you know, where
right.
the emphasis is. It doesn't say how loud it is. Unless the playwright is exceptionally controlling, it says enters stage right. Doesn't say trips onto the stage right.
Right.
Or dances onto the stage right. Or backs out or tiptoes or what. So the performer or interpreter of classical music has roughly, in broad strokes, roughly the amount of freedom that an actor has.
Okay.
Cool. Leslie, you got a question? We're going to hit that right after we come back from our
okey-dokey.
From our drop. All right. 19 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Homegrown, your show about local art. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Benjamin Rouse, music director of the Charlottesville Symphony Orchestra. Leslie.
Yeah, so I have always loved any type of music. My first introduction to anything kind of classical was through musicals. But recently, I was fortunate enough to AD an opera with Victory Hall Opera here in town. And one of the things that struck me was that the conductor, Chris, because of the way... Oh, who was the composer? Rameau.
Mm-hmm.
So he literally wrote movements in different time, like inside a scene. So like 12 measures would be 3/4 time, and then the next 12 would be like completely like 2/2, you know, and move back and forth, and especially between act one and act two, he changed keys.
Mm-hmm.
so like we get done with act one and like we have to have a break so that the orchestra could retune. We're just kind of all sitting in the dark going, all right, we'll be here for a second. I don't know. That damn cello, I just can't get it right, can it? Okay. So my question is, with a larger, and we were working with a very small orchestra. So with a larger orchestra, can you do pieces like that? Can you do stuff that has to like retune in the middle and, you know, all of that kind of stuff?
Well, yes, I would love to look it up to know the work and figure out exactly what was going on there in the pit. Certain things you have to take time for. The clarinets have to change from the B flat to the A instrument. They have to take the mouthpiece out, put the new one in, etc.
I played clarinet. So
you
I
did. Oh, okay, so you know about the different clarinet transpositions.
Yep.
So there are times in the between movements of a symphony where in the rehearsal, the clarinetist will say,
question. I have a question.
In the show, wait for me to change. And then in the concert, they've changed. And once they've made sure that it's all lined up, they'll give you this look like, okay, now we can go. And so you get used to either marking down,
right?
You know, because otherwise you're giving a big fat downbeat, and if it's a clarinet solo, there's going to be silence because
right,
they're not set
right.
up yet.
That's
but
not
yeah,
good.
There are technical hurdles.
And starting Rhapsody in Blue
sections.
Now.
Yeah,
right. Now. Starting Rhapsody in Blue now.
Exactly.
Or now.
Clarinet run any moment.
And in fact, there's a lot of doubling in. Oh, here's a segue. I probably should talk about the performances we've got coming up.
Yes, let's do that.
November 18th and November 19th, we've got this upcoming program. And I mentioned it not at all because I want people to know. Of course, I want people to know, but because the clarinets change a lot in that. And in fact, the piece is the three dance episodes from On the Town by Bernstein, and which is just pure joy. And we're also these programs, by the way, have our big choral collaboration, and this happens every year. The Charlottesville Symphony performs pardon me along with the University Singers. We're doing it every year, and we're doing it this year as well. They're the entire second half of the program. It's going to be fantastic. Two works, including the Well, I should mention both of them. The University of Virginia Suite, which is a new commission that just went up at the big centennial event, the anniversary event, and we're now performing it, and we're performing it uncut, and we're performing it indoors. So that'll be kind of the first
the first
full indoor hearing of it. It's got Bill Barker, the Jefferson emulator from Williamsburg, who's going to be doing the narrations. Great stuff. And also the Randall Thompson Testament to Freedom, which was premiered. The world premiere was in Old Cabell Hall, and it's but with piano only. So now it's being played complete with full orchestra in Old Cabell. So
is this going to be its orchestral premiere?
It's not its orchestral premiere, but it may be its orchestral premiere in Charlottesville. It's been. I mean, it's great work that's been around and all over the world. In fact, but yeah, an interesting piece of history that it was premiered where we're going to be playing it. I say we, but I actually mean Michael Slon, who's conducting that half of the program. And I'm doing the first half, which has the Barber Second Essay for Orchestra, which is genius, and I could rant about it for an hour that we don't have. But but also the dance episodes from On the Town. Bernstein's music is pure heaven.
Yeah, what do you think about Bernstein?
I think a lot of different things about Bernstein. I just mentioned him because there is a saxophone, and the saxophonist also plays clarinet and switches back and forth between the different movements. Speaking of Broadway, in Broadway orchestras, there is a lot of woodwind doubling. And so this woodwind section sort of is derived from a Broadway woodwind section. So that's the way, that's why he has it that way.
In fact, cool.
It was a Broadway show, obviously, On the Town. Bernstein is, he was a force of nature, right? And when you conduct his music, the way that the motion and the energy and the rhythmic gestures come out of the orchestra at you gives you the impression that you're like putting on Bernstein's coat. Or he actually wore a cape sometimes.
Oh,
you
really?
Feel yes, which is
that's awesome.
It's ridiculous, but like people wanted him to wear a cape, right? So it's like he wore a cape. It was just the thing.
That's awesome.
But conducting his music lets you feel what it was like to be him, and that's true for Bernstein because he was a conductor and a composer equally.
Right.
He was maybe even more of a conductor than a composer just because he spent more of his time at that. I don't think he was necessarily better at one or the other, but just that was more of the emphasis of his career. But because he was both and because he knew what it was like to conduct, he wrote music that felt right to him to conduct it. And when you conduct it, you feel that you can feel a little bit what it was like to be him. It's like that with no other composer that I can think of. So it's amazing to perform his music.
Cool. Okay, so I have one last question. So the interesting thing that I noticed about the conductor with the opera is that when she got really excited about something, she wanted to make sure that that the ensemble was emphasizing a beat the way she wanted, she would stomp.
Awesome.
And it was so great to watch her because she'd get to a downbeat that she liked. She was like, And she, one night during rehearsal, she turns to me and she's like, I have to remember not to do that during the show. It's not ladylike. And I'm like, why? I was like, that's awesome. Like, you're entertaining all by yourself to watch. It's great.
And she was playing and you were performing Rameau. Mm-hmm. And so the what that reminds me of is also a French composer and only one generation removed from Rameau was Jean-Baptiste Lully. Mm-hmm. And Lully is known to the student string players who play some Lully pieces in their Suzuki books. But Lully was the top composer and music director of the in Paris, just one generation away from Rameau. And Lully basically invented conducting.
Wow.
And he was like, what, you know, we're talking centuries ago.
Yeah.
And his way was to bang a staff on his podium to
really?
The beat. Yeah, so this reminds me of that, like the stamping on the, and if you got a box, then it makes a nice loud thump.
Yeah.
Which is why he did it. So everyone could hear it. It must have sounded terrible because there was this percussion line with every piece that he was conducting. And Lully accidentally hit his foot with the staff, got gangrene, and died.
No! Wow.
Jean-Baptiste Lully died of conducting.
Leslie, okay, so Jean-Baptiste Louis sees your bloody knee and raises you.
And uses a gangrene.
A fatal gangrene.
Yeah, I guess I'm not as hardcore as I thought I was. I need to step up my game.
Some circularity right there.
So what cool, weird, interesting thing do you do when you're conducting that people can look for?
Try not to stamp on the podium. That's what I do. It's hard not to. I'll tell you something. When I'm conducting, I'm a little bit at war with myself.
Mm.
I want to do everything, and I'm also want to do nothing.
Yeah.
My favorite situation is when the audience experiences the orchestra only.
Mm.
And when I'm told, I like being told, that was great. I loved watching you conduct. But it also hurts me a little bit every time I hear that, that I was not...
That you were pulling focus.
...out of the way of the ensemble. Exactly. And so I think that if people watch me conduct, they will, having heard me say this, they may now be able to observe that I am at war with myself a little bit. I don't like that word. I struggle with myself against my urge to do everything, competing with my urge to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nicely said.
Very nice.
Nicely said. That's it. Gotta stop there.
Yeah, that's great.
That's the button.
So Ben, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us. And you must come back.
Oh, I would love to be back. It's folks who are listening would love to hear about what goes on before we get on the mics and go on air. I'd love to be back. Thank
Only
you for having me.
Only the guests need to know that.
So once again, the series of piece is called The Americans, November 18th, November 19th at Old Cabell Hall, Shawville Symphony Orchestra. Ben, thank you very much.
Thank you, Clinton.
Thanks.
Thank you, Leslie.
Hey, let's talk about...
stuff!
Stuff!
Can we talk about
What's
stuff?
Going on?
Let's talk about stuff going on. All right, currently running... through November 26th, the American Shakespeare Center's summer fall season featuring Much Ado About Nothing, Love's Labor's Lost, Henry VI Part 3 by Shakespeare, and the modern musical Peter and the Starcatcher, all at the Blackfriars Playhouse in Stanton.
Which I just sold my arm and leg to get tickets to see the last showing of Peter and the Starcatcher.
Really?
I have no arms and legs left.
No. Then what are those? Never mind. I don't want to know. Currently running through November 19th, 7 guitars at UVA's Drama Department at the Ruth Kaplan Theater. Yeah, come on out and see what I trip over next and what gets bloodied. It's your last chance for the Virginia Film Festival. Details at www.virginiafilmfestival.org. There's some really cool films this year. You should check it out. Your last chance, Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore at Mary Baldwin College's Fletcher Collins Theater in Stanton.
Ta-da.
That one's about duty, right?
They're all about duty. It's Gilbert and Sullivan.
Your last chance for 45 Central Virginia artists to display their work at City Clay's Artisan Studio Tour at City Clay. November 16th, UVA MFA Reading Series continues this week with Michael Dine and Adam Rao at New Dominion Bookshop. November 16th, Eyes on Art Tour engages people with Alzheimer's disease and meaningful discussions about art at UVA Freelance Art Museum. Local filmmaker Ross McDermott about his documentary, The Ruination of Lavelle Coleman at the Belmont Baptist Church. Who's Lavelle Coleman? Am I supposed to know?
Local flautist, I think.
And apparently they were ruined.
Yeah.
Okay. See photographs by a collection of town and... That's not a typo, right? Town and gown?
Yeah, town photographer. And gown. That's not a... Yeah.
Okay.
There are some citizen photographers and some university photographers.
Oh, okay. At the Open Grounds Corner Studio. That's also November 16th. The 17th through November 19th, glass artist Chip Hall teaches a glassblowing ornament workshop at the McGuffey Art Center. I've always wanted to blow glass.
There you go.
Always. I'd probably be really bad at it, though.
I don't think so.
I don't know. All right. Piedmont Virginia Community College offers an opening reception to their New and South Gallery exhibit. The North Gallery will hold the annual faculty exhibition, and the South Gallery will hold Kids of a Black Hole, new works by Jeremy Seth Taylor. November 17th, Third Friday's Improv Workshop at the V. Earl Dickinson Building at Piedmont Virginia Community College. Albemarle High School offers two short plays together as a one-act adaptation of Kafka's The Castle and Stevens' The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah!
They're doing that as a... That's an interesting... Okay.
Yeah,
anyway.
It is.
November 18th, Charlottesville Book Fair at City Space. Docent Deborah Kavorsky leads a guided tour of current exhibitions at the Kuyuru Aboriginal Art Collection. Special tour of UVA's Freeland Museum of Art from 2 to 3. Veteran Story Theater at the V. Earl Dickinson Building at Piedmont Virginia Community College. An improvisational performance that uses music, movement, and drama to invite veterans and non-veterans alike to share stories of how the military has affected their lives. Butchertown Burlesque Series at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. And for your musical options this week.
For your musical options this week, this afternoon, it's the fall recital. Recital?
Recital?
It's recital.
Recital?
It's recital.
Did you?
It's, that's the Austrian risotto. That's what it is. Little rice grown in the Alps.
No.
little
no.
Stir. This afternoon, the fall recital for the UVA Flute Ensemble in the Virginia Rotunda Dome Room. Also this afternoon, Deborah Guy at the Batesville Market at 1 p.m. Renee Ruth Duo at Wild Wolf Brewery at 2 p.m. UVA's Baroque Orchestra has its fall concert at 3:30 p.m. in Old Cabell Hall, where...
Where,
if it's not broke, they won't fix it.
Oh, God.
Couldn't resist. Could have resisted, but didn't resist.
You
tonight.
Didn't.
King Golden Banshee at 5:30 p.m. at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Tomorrow, ATM unit featuring Jonah Kane West. On November 14th, it's the Charles Owen Trio at Zocalo. Also, the Charlottesville Municipal Band plays the Paramount Theater, playing popular classical, jazz, Broadway, and silver screen selections.
Ooh.
November 14th, also Bob Huntington and then Travis Elliott at Fellini's. On the 15th, we're looking at the open mic night. It's the Weed Eaters at the Whiskey Jar on the 16th. Skip Haga down at Dirty Nelly's. And Remy St. Clair hosts the Crime Times Hip Hop Showcase at the Annie Room.
Remy!
What up, Remy? November 17th, it's the Michael Clem Trio at the Glasshouse Winery.
Hey, Michael!
What up? Also, our friends Mojo Pie down at Dirty Nelly's.
Aw.
The local folk punkers, The Can Do Attitude, will play their release show for their new album with Panther Burn.
Their name is The Can Do Attitude.
The Can Do Attitude. Indeed. Indeed. Yes, they can.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, they can. November 18th.
Paul Revere. Sorry.
Also, number 17th, Jamar and Semi host tunes spun by DJ W and DJ Muddock in the Ante Room late night show Hip Hop versus Reggae Part 2.
Oh my God, I saw Devin last night. Did Not you? Last night, night before last. My days are running together. He gave me this huge hug.
Awesome.
And I just love him.
Awesome. November 18th. Post-hardcore metallic metal melodic metal band Smoke Signals celebrates the release of their EP, Odyssey, along with hardcore duo Time Nothing at the Ante Room. A lot of releases going on.
Are there melodic metal bands?
Yeah, they're melodic metal bands.
Okay.
November 18th, Miles Pearson, Lorne Oppenheimer at the Hardywood Pilot Brewery and Tap Room. Also, Willie D at Almaro Ciderworks, Gabriel Planes, and then Greg Duncan Quartet at Fellini's, Eli Cook Band at Dirty Nelly's.
Hey, Eli!
James Painter Experience at Wild Wolf Brewery, and Choose Your Own Adventure at the Whiskey Jar. Of course, every Friday morning, it's the West African Drum Circle at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Every Monday, the Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Seafoot, the Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music, doing their weekly open jam at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Where else?
Right.
Every Tuesday, the traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Also, Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Umberto Salas at the Bebedero. Ooh. Every Wednesday, it's the open mic night at Pro Renata Farm Brewery. Bam! Open mic night at Holly's Deli and Pub, hosted by Josh Mayo. Bam! Jazz Collective number 9 at Fellini's number 9. Bam! Bachata Fusion at the Ante Room, presented by the Charlottesville Salsa Club. Bam! DJ and Friends at the Bebedero. Bam! And the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Oh, yeah. Every Thursday, Lua at the Bebedero. And if you just need some more, on Thursday, down at Miller's,
John Durth!
Oh, it's the John Durth Quintet. And those are just some
of them
of the artistic
That's
options.
Not all of them. There's more
that are available to you in our wonderful artistic town.
This is filmmaker Lorenzo Dickerson, and you're listening to The Homegrown Show, the show about local art on WPVC 94.7.
39 minutes past the hour. You're listening.
Can I just say, I saw Lorenzo a little while ago. His boys might be the cutest children I have ever seen. Like, they are just absolutely adorable. And they kind of use him as a jungle gym.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's dad as jungle gym. So
that works.
So like, right. So the older one is standing there like with like legs wrapped around Lorenzo's leg, and the younger one's like, "Dad, up." Up. And when he didn't respond, he just started climbing, like just grabbed Lorenzo's pal, was like, "Well, all right."
Because he's trying to get into the pocket where the money is. That's what it, that's
there
what
you
it,
go.
That's
or,
what it is.
Or where the, you know, candy is, just about, I mean, depending on. Yeah, I saw him on Halloween. That's why. Ah.
I see. Stay tuned after this show for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Sean the Man McCord. He's going to be talking to Jenny Wales, the new artistic director of UVA's Heritage Theater Festival. Look at where they get that.
I know.
Talking about her life in the arts and this summer's upcoming festival.
Really?
But we will see you, your UVA Heritage Theater Festival.
Whatever.
And we'll raise you four county players and Jerry Carson Sells back in the show. What up, Jerry?
Not much. Waking up, Tech Week, all that good stuff.
Tech Week, do you have a show coming up?
We have a show coming up.
What might that show be?
It would be A Christmas Story, the musical.
What? No, wait a minute. No, there's this. No, wait. No, just not. I have heard, because I've been around.
Yes.
Around what?
Where's a rim shot when you need it?
A big, round, roly-poly son of a gun. That's what I've been. Like a bowl full of good jelly.
Because you know things.
Mm-hmm. Because you know things.
I know. I have heard that there is a traditional, or at least frequently played, holiday movie called A Christmas Story.
Yes, you have.
I did not know that. Now, if somebody named something A Christmas Story, the musical, did they like? Was there beef with that? Did they have to? I mean, this couldn't be the musical version of that, could
yeah,
it be?
Exactly, it is. And what they did is they actually did work with the original author, Gene Shepherd, of the movie. Uh-huh. And they just adapted it for the stage. The composers, Pasek and Paul, who recently won the Tony Award and also composed La La Land. So they are up-and-coming composers, did the music. It came out, I think, in 2012, if I remember correctly. 2012 or 2013 is when it first debuted. And if you get that soundtrack, it's not the same as it is now. They definitely made a lot of changes.
Oh,
which
wow.
Which was lots of fun when we were trying to put it together. But... but improvements.
And by fun, you mean Madden. Okay, yeah, I got it.
It's nice because it's improvements. You can tell from the original to where it is now that
right.
they worked on it. And they tightened it up and put in a fabulous song for the teacher. And, you know, we've got tap dancing and we've got, of course, bunny suits and BB guns because that's the whole point. That's what he wants.
And you know what? I will bet you all the money in my pocket right now, because I'm an artist, there isn't any. But
exactly.
Anyway, that
all the money in your pocket, both of them.
that at least one of those bunny suits was already owned by Edward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't fit in our Maddie, though, our Ralphie.
Ah, darn.
We had our fabulous costumer, Amy Goffman, shout out, because she rocks.
Amy's
of course,
great.
Amy's wonderful. She made a bunny suit for him, so he's all set. It's on our posters, so you'll see our posters around, and there is our Ralphie, who the kid doing Ralphie, Maddie Ward, get his name right, is wonderful. He's just...
Awesome.
You know, but you have to be, because it's a big part.
Yeah.
You know.
It is,
because
it's all about him.
It's all about him.
Him and the BB gun.
It is.
So part of the fun, at least part of the fun that I've had in doing musicals, is frequently it's there, or at least in directing musicals, it's stuff that I've spent a lot of time with.
Right.
Like, I directed Guys and Dolls, and I've spent, you know, my life listening to Guys and Dolls. So
right.
I walked in with a really, really strong idea of what it was about, of what I thought about it, of the beats, like, of just,
right.
I was very, very familiar with the piece. Talk about directing a new musical, because
well,
you don't get that, right?
You don't have that. You don't have that. I'm the same way. I grew up with all the classics, so those are much easier to start directing because they're the classics. Then again, there's a set thing that people expect with those, and so you have to weigh that. And you can take it a totally different direction, which is fun, but then some audience members, that's not what they want to see. And
right.
So it kind of depends on what theater you're at and what you're working on and all that good stuff. With this one, the movie, I do know very well. I'm one of those people that love the movie. I don't watch it 24 hours on Christmas Day, but I do... I do love the movie. So, and the musical sticks very, very close to the movie.
Yeah.
It just embellishes it. It adds the musical numbers.
Well, you
where
said
that
Shepherd was involved in it, right?
Yes, he was. He was, definitely. So, it's involved. It follows the movie very closely, but then it embellishes. It adds the musical numbers. The Ralphie to the Rescue, for example, kind of rolls all of Ralphie's little gun fantasies into one. The bank robbery, the saloon, the teacher getting tied down to the railroad tracks type of thing. So that's all one huge musical number. And if you know our stage, it's fun to put 28 people on that. But we got them. It's great.
Wow.
Yep.
How large is your cast?
28.
28.
Now, 8 of those are children, so they're, you know, we have a couple 7-year-olds, so they take up the space of, you know, maybe one adult, but yeah, it's a full cast. It's a lot of fun. We're having a good time. We've got Edward, who we all know is playing the old man, so he's wonderful. Natalie, who is our Roxy in Chicago, she's playing the mother,
yeah.
So it's a total different role from Roxy to mother, and so that's really fun. And the kids are great. Julie Stavitsky is our Miss Shields, and she's a teacher in real life, so that's fun for her.
Oh, Julie,
play with that
oh,
a little
great.
Bit. Yeah. And then the kids, again, are great. But our ensemble's also very, very strong. There's a lot of strong ensemble work in this one, too. And that was the other thing, because in the movie, you don't see that much of them.
Right.
You know, it's mostly just the family. So
right.
We've got the townspeople in there. We've got, you know, them playing all the things in the fantasies. They're elves, you know, in the
oh,
Santa scene. So they're the parents of the kids, Flick mm-hmm. and Schwartz, you know, Ralphie's best friends. So
right.
we actually see their parents. So it's fun.
So is there the whole segment with the tongue getting stuck on,
there
the,
is.
On the flagpole?
There's a whole musical number about
I was
this
wondering
tongue
about
stuck.
Oh my
so,
god.
Yeah.
But what I was so is there a you'll put your eye out musical number?
There is. There has to be, you know. Right. That's actually the teacher's big number, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
It's one of Ralphie's fantasies, goes into a nightclub, and it's really, really fun.
See, now
so.
I'm really fascinated.
Yeah, it's really
now
cool.
Now it's really interesting to look at this and say, huh, I wonder, you know, when you sit down and have something like this, how do you decide, you know, what's going to be the musical number?
Yeah.
What are we making
yeah,
to?
And that,
yeah.
you know, of course, is all in the
go?
Authors.
Yeah.
It's really unique and fun, and how they manage to work it all out to where it works together, which I've been really enjoying working with and staging. And like you said, it isn't a show that's been done a whole lot. So it's kind of up to your stage, your set, your imagination, your
right.
cast, what you can play with it. And that's been a lot of fun. And the one thing I didn't mention was the narrator, because in the movie, you know,
right.
adult Ralphie's
yeah,
narrator.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, in the play, there is the narrator on stage, Gene.
Oh.
Gene is his name. Gene Shepherd is the original author of the movie.
Oh.
And is it a character that you actually see, or
mm-hmm.
do you just
you
hear?
See him? He's on, and he becomes part of the action sometimes. Most of the time he's narrating, and, you know, he says at the beginning, but this isn't my story, but it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, right.
You know, so it's really fun. It goes kind of back and forth with that, and it all wraps up very nicely, as the movie did. So, yeah, it's really fun.
Well, I think we need to go see this now, Clinton.
I think you do. Tickets are selling like hotcakes. Actually, they seriously are. The matinees are going like crazy. The Sunday matinees and the Friday nights. The Saturday nights still probably are the best seats available right now. But they are going, so not to advertise, but that's why I'm here.
Well, to Four Counties' credit, I mean, it is a thing that theaters do to do the holiday
right.
theme shows.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And the thing is that When you're programming for a theater, very quickly, like, you run into the finite nature of holiday
oh, yeah.
theme shows.
Right,
but
you do.
For the past few years, Four County has been pulling stuff like out of nowhere. Like,
yeah,
where did they hear about this?
Well, I actually was aware of it. I think we all were aware of it.
Did you bring it to Four County? Did they come to you?
It was a little bit of both, actually. There was actually a different show that I had pitched with my producer that was not available. I'm not even going to say what it was, but it wasn't available. And it wasn't specifically a Christmas show, but it was a family-friendly show.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started talking, and we're like, well, Christmas Story, the musical, is out if we can get the rights. It's been touring. We didn't know if it would be available
right.
for a community theater, but it was. So we got it. We snapped it up because we knew. And the one reason we loved
this
show.
Is this the Virginia premiere? Do you know?
No, it was in Richmond. They did it last year. I don't know if VCU did it or if it was a tour. I honestly don't. I think one of the Virginia Rep maybe did it last year.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure. But it's probably one of the smaller theaters that's done it. And when we were talking about programming, you know, their Christmas, we like to make our Christmas show very family friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, we just did The Crucible, which is not very family friendly. It's a good show. And then in May, we're doing Avenue Q, which is not for small children. So we wanted to make sure we had a show, one, that the kids and teenagers could be in,
mm-hmm.
as well as for the audience. So that's kind of why we chose it. But, yeah, we try and pull out those different ones that haven't been done 20 million times. You know?
Yeah.
Hey, let's do a draw.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do that. Pay a bill, maybe. Maybe. Half a bill. We'll pay half a bill. You know.
51 minutes past the hour, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And this is Homegrown, your show about local arts. Stay tuned. It's brought to you by the fine law firm of Tochterman, Overman, Munson, and Burke. Legal services like a song. Oh, stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call. What?
Mouse.
Oh, yeah. Stay tuned for Sunday morning wake-up call. with your host, Sean the McCord, always above board. His guest is going to be Jenny Wales, the new artistic director of UVA's Heritage Theater Festival, talking about her life in the arts and the summer's music, the summer's theater festival. But if you can't wait for the summer for good theater, we're still here with Jerry Carson Sauls from Four County Players, talking about A Christmas Story, the musical.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Yes.
So, did the original script and score call for 28 people, or did you add people?
No, it doesn't really give you a definite amount of people that you need. If you look at the cast list, there's like a million small parts there.
Holy crap!
That. So that's, you know...
Okay.
So there's a lot of smaller parts.
Jiminy Bimini!
Two pages.
What I do is we see who auditions and we go from there.
Yeah.
And we were lucky enough to have a lot of very, very strong people audition. So I was able to fill out the cast. We actually have 9 children, not 8. I forgot one. Sorry, Randy. Yeah. But
wow. And she
I
named
know.
The one. She
well,
forgot.
It's the character because the Ralphie's class is 8 kids, but then his little brother. Is not in his class.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So, anyway, so yeah, you just see who shows up, and we had just really strong people, and we needed to have some adults in there to obviously be the parents and things like that. But I also had some very, very strong teenagers that I wanted to use because they're great, they're focused, they work really hard, and so we kind of have basically a teen ensemble within the ensemble that does. For example, there's the major award, which is, you know, the leg lamp.
Yes,
there's a whole musical number there, which is a very old fashioned Busby Berkeley type silver screen.
That's awesome.
And so we feature our teen girls in that with Edward. So it's a lot of fun. You can just imagine leg lamps everywhere.
Well, you know, Edward is pretty much a teenage girl.
So one last question you before we close it up. Biggest challenge for you in this process, what has that been?
Oh, gosh, that's a tough question. Probably trying to figure out logistics. What's in my brain to put on this stage with the 28 people when it's the big numbers. And then also keeping the heart in the story. It's not all about just, you know,
talk
flashiness.
About that. What do you mean by that?
Well, this is about, it's about a little boy that wants a BB gun because that's all he wants. Well, it's also a lot about family, about what this family, you think the old man is kind of a gruff man, but then at the end, he's the one that gives his son what he really, really wants and helps him out with that. And there's Gene, the narrator, has, I don't want to say it because it's a beautiful line and you have to wait and come see it, but a lovely line about why this Christmas is the Christmas he remembers most. And it has a lot to do with family. And if the way it's staged, I hope that comes across because I've made family units with the cast members and they're actually calling each other their brothers and sisters and mom and dad right now, which has been really fun. So
that's awesome.
That's probably been one of the neatest things. Not challenging, but neat.
Jerry, thank you so much for coming back on the show. Give people the when, where, and how.
Yes, when is we open this Friday, November 17th, and we run weekends through December 17th. So you got a month. 2 shows this coming week, Friday, Saturday. 2 shows after Thanksgiving, Saturday, Sunday. Bring your family if you don't want to sit around at home with them anymore. go to... I did not say that. Go to our website, www.forcp.org. You can get tickets that way, or you can call the box office, 540-832-5355.
Oh, yeah, call and talk to Ro.
Talk to Ro. Ro rocks.
Right?
Talk to Ro.
Yes.
Ro does rock.
Ro does rock.
She's awesome.
She is.
I love that woman.
Jerry Carson Sauls, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a blast.
Look forward to having you back again.
I'm sure.
And now it's time for Leslie's Weekly Rant.
Oh, isn't it? All right. So, 3 Wilson plays in 1 year. Some people would say that was crazy. And maybe it is. But this morning, I just wanted to take a moment to express my gratitude and my enormous fortune to be able to do this work. For those of you who don't know August Wilson, you should get to know him. He was a prophetic and rhythmic writer. His words and the way he constructs them are music. They follow rhythms older than any of us, rhythms that come from Africa, and they talk about life in America. They talk about what it's really like to be black in America. artists who do Wilson are called Wilsonian soldiers. And until you do one of his plays, you don't really understand that distinction. And having done three of them in 1 year, I now understand. Plays that seem simple are amazingly complex. Speeches that on the surface are ranting or solemn are layered and with so much emotion that sometimes you don't even realize it. Wilson shows the ingenuity and resilience of Black people. He shows how we can laugh through tears and celebrate in the midst of amazing tragedy. His plays are a tapestry of what it means to be Black, and the tapestry is composed of the threads that have bound us since the beginning of time. Blues, family, responsibility, ancestry, pride, love. All of this is found and, in a sense, rediscovered in a Wilsonian work. It's Black magic. And I am so thankful to have been able to tell these stories in the Black vernacular. And I can't wait for the next one. Because I'm crazy. And that's the weekly rant.
All right. Well, then that's it for our show. This has been Homegrown, your show about local arts, soldiering on for yet another week without our madman, David. Please,
that darn day job.
Please, day job. Let David go. Let David go.
Can David come out to play?
Set my David free. Set our David free. This has been Homegrown, your show about local art. We'd like to thank our guests, Ben Rouse from the Charlottesville Symphony Orchestra, Jerry Carson Sauls, of course, working at Four County Players. Coming up next, Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Sean the Man McCord. His guest is going to be Jenny Wales, new artistic director of UVA's Heritage Theater Festival, talking about her life and arts and this summer's theater festival. Thank you very much, Leslie. This has been Homegrown, your show about local art. See you next week.
Listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.